Text 21. Then with the water of that prosania vessel, you should sprinkle the area where the deity is being worshipped, the offerings that are going to be presented, and his own body. Next, he should decorate with various auspicious substances the vessel filled with water. Explanation. This verse mentions purification of place, stanchuti, of paraphernalia, drabhyashuti, and of oneself, atmashuti, by sprinkling prokshana. The words taisti in the original Sanskrit, meaning with those available, suggests that the pujari need not be overly anxious if a particular item is unavailable for offering. One can offer unavailable items by substituting available ones while meditating on the former. Oh, I see. Substitute unavailable with available. Okay. So basically is everything must be pure. The Lord, whatever he does is pure. Everything must be pure. So in the offerings to the Lord, then the standard of purity is the utmost point. So the ultimate standard of purity is the purity of the heart, the chitta shuddhi. And that not only should just be pure, but it should be the platform of pure devotion. Like that. So that we are pure from material contamination is half of that process. In other words, disconnecting us from the material world. So as we become detached, as we develop knowledge, that is important. Very important will be how we become attached to Krishna. Like that. That is becomes more important. So we need both. We can't become attached to Krishna factually if we're attached to the material world. It means you can't be attached to two opposing things at one time. One is attached to one, or one is attached to others. Like one can be attached to sleep, or one can be attached to being awake. One can't be both. So, in the same way is that to bring us, elevate us to that platform of purity, but from which we can then very seriously take up cultivating the devotion or attachment to Krishna, then it's done through these processes of purification. And when everything externally is very pure, then it makes it much easier for us to internally become pure. Right? That is the process. In the spiritual realm, everyone is internally pure, so naturally, externally manifests the spiritual body. Here in the material world, because internally we're not pure, we manifest the material body. So then we try to purify that material body, purify the material mind, material intelligence, and try to reverse that process. Because of our absorption and attachment to the material body, mind and senses, therefore we have turned all our attention there. But as we purify that, and then with knowledge, in other words, performing these rituals with knowledge, and reverses this process. Instead of becoming contaminated by dealing with the material energy, we become purified. We're taking this water, it's material energy, taking flowers, taking brass paraphernalia, and so it's all material energy. But because now we're using it in Krishna's service, that we're keeping it very pure, you know, according to the rules. We're trying to keep ourselves very pure according to the rules, and we're trying to do this for pleasing Krishna under the order of Guru. Then we find we become purified. So the same thing that contaminated us before is now purifying us. So the process is taking out a thorn with a thorn. So this is what's happening. So we'll see that cleanliness is a very essential element. Prabhupada said cleanliness is punctuality. These are the two most essential elements in deity worship. Everything else is coming from here. Like that. So the aspect of cleanliness, this is giving an example of cleanliness. And then what is happening? What is happening after what? That's time. So that's punctuality. So previously we've done other aspects. like that. Now he's purifying with water. Right? This it just moves on in this way. So that's the time. So after this, then there's this. After this, then there's this. So that's the proper aspect of punctuality. So it's not just the clock, but it's that this happens after this, after this, after this. So the performance has a natural progress. Like that. So that's done in the proper time. So if there's too much of a gap between them, or you forgot to prepare the pot, and now you must do that, that's not punctual. It means in the beginning, when you're setting up the paraphernalia, when you're doing the patristapa, then you should have made the pot. That's punctual. And you did it in a clean way. So that's cleanliness. Now we're further refining that cleanliness, and now time is also elapsing, and we're using it in the proper way. So now is the time for the pot to sprinkle all the water and sprinkle all the paraphernalia. Right? So that's better. So this is another aspect of time. So we see how the time and the cleanliness enters into everything. It's not just meeting up by the clock. Clock, of course, that's that you start at the proper time, you end at the proper time, but also in between, you went through the things in the proper time. You know, like you're doing an artik, not that you offer the incense for 2 seconds and then the champa for 15 minutes. That's the proper time. So there has to be a proper balance like that. Then that's the proper punctuality. Also. And then this other aspect of that he brought up here, tais, is that means you make your endeavor to get all nice things, but if something's not available, then whatever is available, that you offer. And if something's not available at all, then you replace it with flowers or water or rice, like that. In some way, it's done. Though in the Manasapuja, then you can offer everything. But maybe we don't have any external offering of the puja. Like that. Okay, text. Any questions on that? Or? Okay. Text 22. The worshipper should then purify those three vessels. Sanctify the vessel holding water for washing the Lord's feet by chanting Hridayaya Namaha. The vessel containing the water for Argya by chanting Shirashe Swaha. And the vessel containing water for washing the Lord's mouth by chanting Shikaya Vashat. Also, the Gayatri Mantra can be chanted for all three vessels. So you have these, this is a standard nas is being performed. So it can either be performed on one item, let's say you're installing that pot, the Prokshaniya pot. You would do all three with them. Means Hridayaya Namaha is what is the seed of it. And then Shirashe Swaha is generally when you're pouring the water. And you're putting the vessel, and then Sikaya Vashad is when you fill it with water. So in this way you see it'll be done. But here these three are like taken together. Padya Argya Mashmaniyam generally always go together. You know, especially if it's very official worship, you know, formal worship. But these always go together. Panchapatra basically comes from that you would have 5 achma cups. You have padyam, argyam, achmaniyam, and I think, I'm not sure if it wasn't madhupatra. And then you'd have one in the middle, just plain water. So then you'd have all those 5 there, and when you were doing puja, everything came out of those 5. So they were done and they had a particular shape, and there were 5 of them. So they become the panchapatras, the patras. There's 5 patras, panchapatras. So that style of cup, that is what we call our achman cup, like that. Because there's other styles of achman cups and these vessels. Like this. But this is the main. You know what we use that has the pot and the spoon, or the cup and the spoon. Like, it's the most how you say, it's the most universally applicable. Other ones have specific functions, like pots with the snoots on them. They can pour water, but they're much more hard to use in Achman cups, like that. And then you have the kosher koshi, which look like a fish, like that. It's generally used more for in the Shaiva and Durga worship, the demigod worship. Then those are very good for Achman and throwing water, but you can't. It's more difficult. You can't pour water from them so easily, and they're more bulky. You can't move them around so easily, just the nature of them. So you have different. So on our tradition, the Panchapatra is the prominent of the vessels used. So here, those three that were being sprinkled before. So we see here, Prokshmi is done before. So one purifies whatever one is dealing with. So there's always purification, then there's installation, and then depending on what it is, there may be worship or respect. So here we, the previous talk, we by Prokshmi, we purified. Now in this text, then we are basically installing. We're putting whatever mantras and this and that to the thing. So here we say Hridaya Namaha is the Lord's, Then, any question on that? This is also the Gayatri Mantra. Then after those have been done, and the Gayatri Mantra will be chanted over, and then that finishes the installation of this paraphernalia. Yes.
In our puja, when we do this, when we put some conch or something, and we say only the Namaha, and everyone in the full water, and don't say disturb them.
The stand is Hridaya Namaha. The conch is Shridhara Swaha, and the water is Shigaya Shat. Yeah, we'll be all three go together. Yeah, I think if you look in here, you'll see that's how it's explained. But generally, they all go together. And then afterwards, it's the Gayatri. You know, and it's protected. So then the protection of it is generally Swaha Strayat. Okay, so here's the Gayatri should be standard for all three vessels. So here you're getting the Prokshini has been done for ourselves, and these basic procedures are being done. So here in this was one who understands the puja. That's why we're dealing with this section afterwards. Is one who understands and see how many of these things, as Krishna explaining it, they're overlapping. Like that. You may be doing the prokshana on all these things, then going to them and installing all the different paraphernalia that you have to do. The principle is that prokshana is done, then the installation is done. You know, or further purification with mantras and mudra and like that. Then after all these things are done, all the paraphernalia, we've been purified, all the paraphernalia has been purified and made ready for the worship, then we go to the next one. Text 23. The worshipper should meditate upon my second form, which is situated with the worshipper's body, now purified by air and fire, as the source of all living entities. This form of the Lord is experienced by self-realized sages in the last part of the vibration of the sacred symbol Om. Okay, this is getting into now purification of ourself, so we're not up to the Manasa Puja. So here we purified everything. Then we dealt with the paraphernalia, right, in text 22. In 21, we also purified ourselves by prokshana. And here in text 23, we're purifying the body, chitta shuddhi, and also by meditating on this Lord, chitta shuddhi. The consciousness becomes purified. So here, explanation. This verse refers to purification by pranayama and buddha shuddhi. As mentioned here, when they use the Om Bija in pranayam, Sanatana Goswami recommends the Kama Bija. Gaudiya Vaishnava follow a procedure for Bhukshuti in which one meditates on one's position as the eternal servant of the Lord. So, Bhutashuti may be preceded by Dikbandana and Vahini Prakara, literally closing the 10 directions and circling oneself with such fire. These functions, which are sound mantra and meditation, build a wall of protection around the devotee to ensure concentration for deity worship. The mind, especially if distracted, may be influenced by various subtle negative personalities. But a person who is sufficiently fixed in devotion may not be subject to these influences, and therefore for him these functions are optional. This verse and the previous four verses refer to the six kinds of purification required in deity worship. Satshuti, in other words, purifying the place, the paraphernalia, the body, the consciousness, the mantra, and the deity. These are the six kinds of purity. So, Bhutashuddhi will always be performed, but it's just a matter of how elaborate. This is what he is mentioning here in the optional. It means elaborately or with a lot of ritual, that is optional. Main point is that we, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends, we identify ourselves as the servant of the Lord. Naham vipro na cha narapatir napi krishna shudro dham varni na cha gihapatir nova nashtav yatir va kintu prodya nikat paramananda puramritabdi gopi bartu parikamalayor dasa dasana dasa. We identify ourselves as the servant of the servant of Krishna. We don't identify ourselves with the body. So that is Bhutashuddhi. Buddha means the gross elements: earth, fire, air, ether. So it's Buddha, you know, Panch Mahabhutas, like that. So then we purify those by the process of changing the mind, changing the intelligence, changing the consciousness. So consciousness becomes changed, and we don't think I'm the body. We identify as servant of Krishna, then the intelligence becomes purified, the mind becomes impurified, and that's connected to the body and senses. So that works very nicely. So the devotee who is always thinking of the Lord, then is always pure. Like that. And then if one is not always thinking, then generally this process of Bhutashuddhi is recommended. So many times also I think it was in the early processes. At this point, you could chant Gayatri. Because that also then is a meditation on Guru Granth and Krishna. And so then that helps in the identification in this way. I think that would be the purpose there. So with all these things and these six duties are... so now we're continuing on this Bhutashuddhi here. Text 24. The devotee conceives of the super soul whose presence surcharges the devotee's body in the form corresponding to his realization. Thus the devotee worships the Lord to his full capacity and becomes fully absorbed in him. By touching the various limbs of the devotee and chanting appropriate mantras, the devotee should invite the super soul to join the deity's form, and then the devotee should worship me. So now, here we have it. Explanation. Verses 23 and 24 describes chittasuddhi, vivification of consciousness, dhyana, meditation on the Lord's presence, and manasapuddhi. Okay, so this is part of the Manasa Puja, worship within the mind. Verse 24 describes avahana, invoking or calling the deity from one's own heart. This is generally not done with permanently installed deities. However, Lord is called into a temporary deity, Argya, Vishesha Argya, known as Dhyana Dana Argya, into water for bathing deity, and into fire for Yajna. Meditation, mantras, and rudra, one invites the Lord to the desired place, and it offers protection by Nyas, touching different parts of the deity, chanting mantras. So here we see that this meditating on the super soul, then that's after the Bhutashuddhi, then one should be thinking of the Lord, that one is the Lord's servant here. And that naturally goes into the point of that one is meditating on that form of the Lord that one is worshipping, like that. Then from here, if you're worshipping a temporary installed deity, then from the heart you then, how you say? Yeah, then you invite the super soul to join the deity's form. That, in other words, that form that you've meditated upon, that form of the super soul, then you invite it into the deity. So that then becomes, how you say, that is the avahan. It has to be done. So if you're worshipping a pot or worshipping, you know, some form that is temporarily installed, then that would be the method. So we could see that there's no such thing as an uninstalled deity. There's a temporary installed deity. It means here, before this started, the Lord, I mean, he's not different from his form, but he's not officially there for worship. But then with this, we've called the deity, because he says, then you touch him with appropriate, touch the various limbs of the deity, chant appropriate mantras, so that's nyas. You're going to touch the different parts of the Lord after you've invited him in. And then that he's pleased to be present then, which is done in this way, with proper attitude. So then that becomes, yeah. So this is the example of temporary installed deity. Even if you're doing permanently before one does the actual avahan, this is what one is doing. This is what one is doing. Okay, now we get into the meditation or dhyana on the deity, on the transcendental form. Because then one generally does these meditations while doing these aspects of the puja at this point. Because the next verse, then one starts to get back into, this is then going straight into the external puja. So now this is point is Manasapuja, Dhyana Manasapuja. So here, Krishna Chaitanya writes on Dhyana, meditation of Krishna's transcendental form. Lord Shiva prays, my dear Lord, I wish to see you exactly in the form that your very dear devotees worship. You have many other forms, but you wish to see the form that is especially liked by the devotees. Please be merciful and show me that form, for only that form worshipped by the devotees can perfectly satisfy all the demands of the senses. Bhagavatam 4:24-44. In his Bhaktisandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami points out that this dhyana should be on the form of the Lord situated in his eternal abode, not, as for the yogis, on the form of the Lord in the heart. So, in other words, we always... See, you know, we'll always think of Shyama Sundar. That's we don't think of Paramatma like that. The following is a translation of extensive meditation on Krishna from the Harivari Vilas. For elaborate worship of Radha Krishna, one may perform this dhyana prior to Manasa Puja. So this means it's what you will be thinking. yet the pure land of Vrindavan is cooled by the presence of trees whose tender branches are laden with clusters of new buds and the most attractive flowers. These trees are flowing with honey and saturated with heavenly fragrances, and the trunks are entwined with vines decorated with clusters of fresh flowers. The heart of Vrindavan resounds with the humming of swarming bees who have come to taste the nectar from the blossoming flowers. With the cries of the doves, parrots, sharikas, and cuckoos, everywhere the peacocks dance. Vrindavan is served by soft, smooth, soothing breeze. Vrindavan is served by a soft, soothing breeze, carrying a fine spray from the lapping waves of the Jamuna. That breeze, bearing the pollen dust from the interiors of fully blown lotuses, playfully shakes the garments of the gopis, whose minds then become agitated with desire for their lord. In the midst of Vrindavan stands a flowering, towering Kalpvruksha tree, bestower of all desires, whose branches are coral, whose leaves are emeralds, whose bouquets of buds are diamonds and pearls, whose fruits are rubies. Served by the seasons personified, it produces all kinds of flowers simultaneously. So we see that in the meditation, in the dhyana, it always starts with the overall situation. Then it just starts coming closer and closer. So now we've come to the tree. You know, we had the atmosphere, then we had the devotees there, then the tree. Now we come to the base of the tree. Then who's it, what's at the base of the tree then? Who's at the base of the tree? Look at this. At the base of the nectar flowering Kalpvruksha tree is an area that shines as brilliantly as the sun rising over a range of solid gold mountains. Sparkling with inlaid jewels and glowing with heaps of golden pollen, this place is completely freed from the waves of lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. On the jewel-inlaid floor is an exquisite apsan in the form of an eight-petaled lotus, tinted the color of dawn. In the center, as resplendent as the rising sun, sits Lord Mukunda in a comfortable pose. He shines like a brilliant dark sapphire, as deep black as lead black, as dark as a mountain of monsoon clouds, as delicate as a blue lotus. On his black mass of hair, which is thick, glossy, and curled, sits a luminous peacock feather. On his head rest ornaments of parijata blossoms, attended eagerly by swarms of bees, and on his ears are fresh flowers. In the middle of his forehead, surrounded by stray locks of hair, shines vertical bright yellow tilak between a pair of long, creeper-like eyebrows. His face shines like the flawless moon of the autumn season, and his eyes are wide like lotus petals. His mirror-like cheeks glitter with the rays from his jeweled, sharp-shaped earrings. His beautiful nose points upward gracefully, and his tender smile, resembling the moon, a jasmine or a mandara flower, illuminates all his features. Around his conch-shaped neck hangs a string of coral flowers and young leaves. From his shoulders to his feet extends a garland of Kalpvruksha flowers, swarming with intoxicated bees. On his broad chest rest a sparkling string of pearls, like a constellation of stars, a shining Kastuba jewel, like the sun in the sky, and its distinguishing mark, the Sri Vatsa. His shoulders are high, his well-formed thick arms reach to his knees, and his stomach is slightly indented and raised, with a handsome deep navel at its center. Extending upwards from his navel is a delicate line of black hair. He is decorated with armbands, bracelets, necklaces, anklets, cords, and a golden belt studded with jewels. Various designs are painted on different parts of his body. Around his waist is wrapped a yellow cloth. He has beautiful thighs and knees, charming ankles, and feet more lustrous than polished turtle shells. His toenails shine like ruby mirrors, and his toes are like jeweled leaves. on his pink hands and feet, pleasing signs of the fish, elephant goat, chakra, conch, flag, lotus, thunderbolt, and barley corn. His body, comprising the topmost element of beauty, conquers the physical attraction of Cupid, the god of love. Shri Krishna is an ocean of unlimited bliss. From his flute, made perfect by association with his lotus face, arise transcendental ragas as he moves his fingers in a simple way. Hearing those ragas, all the creatures and their offspring become attracted and stunned, their hearts melted. Shri Krishna is surrounded by cows with long, slender tails. They approach him with an unsteady gait, for their udders are swollen with milk. The large eyes become glued to the lotus face of the Lord, while half-chewed, tender shoots of grass remain poised on the ends of the teeth. The newborn calves remain motionless, the beauty enhanced by the milk foam flowing from the small lips, and lips and teeth, with which they had so eagerly sucked at the full udders. They cocked their little ears to hear the deep, enchanting notes from his flute. The older calves, with colorful blankets around their throats and little horns emerging from their stuffed heads, raise their tails, butt each other, playfully gallop this way and that, and finally gather around the Lord. The massive bulls, laden with the burden of their huge humps, lowing deeply, approach him lazily. But when the liquid nectar from the flute enters their cocked ears, they flare their nostrils and tilt up their heads. The cowherd boys, similar to Krishna in character, blissful nature, age, activity, and dress, play sweet, low melodies on their flutes and venus. They sing graceful tunes, and with their arms extended, they dance very expertly. The babies, with little lisping words in their mouths, tiger claws hanging from their necks, and jingling bells attached to their ankles and fat bellies, also approach the Lord. The attractive cowherd girls, their waist marked with three lines, come forward eager to serve him. They sway with the weight of their broad, heavy hips, and their heads bow beneath their piles of abundant hair. The desire trees of their bodies, drenched with the nectar of his flute, sprout goosebumps, flowers blooming on a vine. The ocean of prema in the gopis' hearts expands due to the moonbeam smile of Nanda's son, and the splashing from those gushing waves of prema appear as drops of perspiration on the bodies of the laboring gopis. From his long bowed eyebrows, he shoots sharp glances, a shower of deadly arrows of love that break the vulnerable points in the composure of the gopis. Disturbed but unsubmitting, they try to suppress the painful trembling that begins to afflict all parts of their bodies. But eager to drink the nectar of the uncomparable form of Krishna, with half-closed bashful eyes, they furtively glance upon him. And thus they continue to float in the streams of prema. Swarms of bees, eager to drink the honey flowing from the flowers that have fallen from their loosened tresses, surround the gopis. In their intense frenzy, the gopis utter inaudible tender words, and their waist cells jingle from their uncontrollable trembling. Their fine silk claws, loosened by their heavy breathing, reveal the parts of their lustrous bodies. The soft sound of their hesitant footsteps mixes with the sound from their jeweled anklets and echoes in all directions. The lips quiver, their earrings glitter, and their eyes, rimmed with graceful eyelashes, stay half closed out of shyness. The agitation of their deep breathing causes their pink lips to darken. In their delicate, sportive hands, they hold various presentations for the Lord, whom they constantly attend. The Lord, a reservoir of pleasure, is decorated with a garland of full-blown blue lotuses in the form of the gopis' dark, restless eyes, which fix themselves on his form. Those eyes, like a garland of love-hungry bees, madly drink the liquid honey of his all-attractive face. The gopis, and cows remain at some distance, while the devatas stand in front with Brahma, Shiva, and Indra in the head, reciting verses to attain material wealth, artha. To the right side, the assembled munis. To the right side stand the assembled munis, intent on fulfilling the codes of Dharma with Vedic knowledge. Behind, Shankha and other yogindras, wanting liberation, moksha, remain in a state of samadhi. To the left stand the yakshas, sittas, gandharvas, vidyadharas, and charanas with their wives, along with the kinaras, and the best of the apsaras. In the pursuit of kama, pleasure, they sing, dance, and play musical instruments. In the sky appears Narad Muni, as white as a conch, shining like the moon, a jasmine, and a lightning bolt. He is decorated with matted locks of reddish hair. Knowing the conclusion of all scriptures, he serves Krishna's lotus feet with undeviating devotion, having given up all material pleasures. He pleases the Lord by plucking his veena, which produces wonderful melodies arranged in skillful ragas. So that's the jhanam that one can perform. Like that. Like this, this is very elaborate, and there's other little bit more simple ones that are listed in the Nidhipatra book. In other places, where we see that so with that, then one, that's the dhyana, and then manasapuja, then that one would go through the 60 items within the mind and then offer them to Krishna. So those would all be offered to the Lord at this time. Then after this, then we go into the main puja itself. Is there any questions on this dhyana and mindfulness puja? No? Okay. Text 25-26. The worshipper should first imagine my seat is decorated with the personified deities of religion, knowledge, renunciation, and opulence, and with my 9 spiritual energies. He should think of the Lord's sitting place as an 8-petal lotus, refulgent on account of the saffron filaments within its whirl. Then, following the regulations of both the Vedas and the Tantras, he should offer me water for washing the feet, water for washing the mouth, arya, and other items of worship. By this process, he achieves both material enjoyment and liberation. Text 25, so explanation here. Text 25 describes Pit Puja, worship of the place where the Lord is situated with his various associates. To perform Pit Puja, one first draws an 8-petal lotus with sandalwood paste in the Snan Patra, the deity's bathing place, and using 4-petals of mantras, worships the Lord's various associates and energies in the different parts of the lotus. Since this procedure is rather elaborate, the Pujari is not expected to perform it with all details in his daily worship. One may, however, follow the advice for meditation Lord Krishna gives in this verse before worshiping with paraphernalia. In other words, the Lord's seat. After you've done the now when we actually get down to worshiping the Lord, it's the Lord's seat. And then there's going to be then at this time you would install the deity in the water, the Dana Argya. You would install the bath water. So up to this point we've done all the preliminary. And so that is then the finish of the mind. The yoga has been complete with this jhana and manasa puja. Then now we're going to actually perform the external puja, so that we've established the Lord's seat and the specific argya, and that will be offered to him. So then the text. Okay, text 26 then describes Krishna Kshetra continues. Text verse 26 describes the offering of upacharas before the bathing of the deity. Whenever the deity is moved from one asan, position of receiving worship, to another, the worshipper may offer padya, foot wash, argya, auspicious things presented to a honored guest, and akshmaniya, water for sipping. The repeated offering of these and other upacharas found in the list of 64 upacharas relate to the changes of asan during the course of the day. So now, then, so it says, and other items of worship. So in other words, here Krishna's described the whole process. Because here what he's explaining to Uddhava is, for one who knows deity worship, what is the most essential points? Because there's so many, the Vedas, the mantras, the pancharatras, all these different things. So you need to know what is the best procedure. How is the movement of these going to take place? Then he mentions, according to the Vedas and the Tantras, and that you perform the offering of the 16 items. Because that's standard. Basically, everyone follows the same thing. But then in the preliminaries and then the conclusions, generally there's a lot of variety there. Krishna gives a little bit more detail. So he's just touching on the main essential items. You know, as Uddhava is, you know, experienced and trained in these things, but he's explaining to him very nicely the process. Then Nodan Achman. So now, here we have Achman. Krishna Kshetra gives a note on the Achman. And so now, here, this Achman that is mentioned here is in relation. So you have Achman that's in relation to Padamargyam Achmaniyam. That means you're just sipping a little bit of water with mantra for subtle purification. Like that. So there's other forms of Achman that are not. So this is one of this Achman means one of the 16 items. Right. So now there's all kinds of other manifestations of Achman that are connected with other items. Like with the snan, after receiving the Lord, after Madhuparka, after bathing, after dressing, then chanting. Let's see, chanting the Gayatri, then after eating, these times the Achman is done, but connected with those other items, so they may take a different form. So after bathing, Achman basically means gargling. If you take your bath, then one of the final things to do just before you leave the bathing area is rinse your mouth. Because in the bath, then so many different aromas and all this and that are there. So this then, there's a final purification before leaving the bathing area. Is that one would rinse one's mouth before going. So that's called Achman. It is Achman, but it is in the form of gargle. Rinsing your mouth and spitting that out. So the different times, the Achman may have these different meanings. Like that. So he's pointing that out here, Krishna Kshetra. Then one should worship in order the Lord Sudarshan disk, oh, the Lord Sudarshan disk, his Panchajanya conch shell, his club, his sword, bow, arrow, and plow, his Mushala weapon, his Kusuma gem, his flower garland, and the Sri Vrita curl of hair on his chest. One should worship the Lord's associates, Nanda and Sunanda, Garuda, Prachanda and Chanda, Kabala and Bala, and Kapuda and Kumudakshan. Explanation. The temple is a replica of the Lord's spiritual abode, whose appearance and the dimension of the scriptures and whose appearance and dimensions the scriptures define. The palace in Vaikuntha has four gates guarded by four pairs of guards. Also present at the entrance of the Lord's associate are the Lord's associates and energies. To gain access to the Lord, the devotee must first gain the favor of the guards and associates, which he does by worshipping them. By worshipping the Lord's associates, the devotee recognizes that without their mercy, approaching the Lord is impossible. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12 elaborates. My dear King Rahugana, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth. One cannot realize the absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, brahmacharya, strictly following the rules and regulations of household or life, leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyas, or undergoing severe penances in winter by keeping oneself immersed in water, or surrounding oneself in summer by fire and scorching heat of the sun. There are many other processes for understanding to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. Nikshetra continues, although present-day temple structures may not conform to scriptural directions, descriptions. Since the Lord is present in the temple's abode is also present, though we cannot see it. Therefore, devotees may still worship the Lord's doorkeepers and associates. This is often done through meditation after one enters the deity room and sits down under asana. Then entering the deity room, when entering the deity room for the first time in the day, the devotee should remember the associates and beg their permission to enter the temple, enter and render service. Then, text 29, with offerings such as Prakshana, one should worship Durga, Vinayaka, Vyasa, Vishvakshina, the spiritual masters, and various demigods. All these personalities should be in their proper places, facing the deity of the Lord. Explanation. Recognizing that the Lord is never alone, and that he can be satisfied only if one first offers his devotees respect, Pujari can simply remember all the paraphernalia and personalities described in verses 27 through 29, when he begins to worship the deity, in the worship of Radha and Krishna, remembering God's associates in Golok Vrindavan, and the Mahajanas is preferred to remembering the Vaikuntha residents mentioned in these verses. Most important is to remember the spiritual master, who is the sum total of all the demigods. Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse in his Bhakti Sandarbha, pointing out that the demigods referred to here are in fact not the demigods of this material world, but are eternal associates of the Lord's Vaikuntha, having the same names as material demigods. Thus the Vaikuntha demigods are worshipable as the Lord's pure devotees. So we see one aspect here that he's given kind of a synopsis of the whole puja here, just in these few verses. That what you're doing before, that you're going to make the asan for him, receive him, worship him with all the various items. Then after that, then you're going to worship all his paraphernalia, personal paraphernalia, and personal associates, and the spiritual masters. So, in other words, we see that there's a complete cycle here, is that we've taken the blessings of the devotees, and we've established all the paraphernalia and everything. Then after worshipping the spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and performing mental mantra puja, dhyanam and mantra puja of the deity, then we've actually worshipped the deity, so we've come up through the grace of the devotees, through the parampara, then we worship his his paraphernalia and external associates and back down to Parashat. So it's a complete cycle. So this has been explained in these few verses here, that the whole cycle is this. All these different things. Then after this, then he'll get into details, other aspects of the details. It means that you're going into, you've received him, and then Padimargi Machmaniyam, and you know, so many other things that go along with it, and then they'll get into details that happen after that. So this, in other words, when we respect the Lord, then we respect everybody that's with the Lord. So here you've invited the Lord, you've respected him, and then you go and everybody that goes with him, because they all go with him. This is another aspect, that in the temple, then they would situate all these different personalities, like Kunta temples. So after invoking the Lord's presence and receiving him, because Padisargamachaniyam, this is reception. And other paraphernalia, Madhuparka, Punarachma, you know, whatever may be there, lamps and these are different things. Then one would go and respect all of the Lord's associates with that, with the remnants of that. So the point is what's offered to the Lord is then offered to his devotees. Right? So it's very elaborate Vaikuntha worship. At this point, you could go and take those remnants from that worship of receiving the Lord and respect all his associates. But the main, that's the detail. The main principle is through the devotees we approach the Lord. By the blessing we worship the Lord. Then those, the remnants of the Lord, we offer to them, we respect and worship them. And then afterwards, then we distribute to the devotees and we take ourselves. So there's a principle that is made here. The details that can be applied at this time in the Vaikuntha worship. Right? Though we ourselves generally will deal with this later. We won't go in between, because in the Vaikuntha worship, every asan you make a whole big to-do out of. So the reception asan, the mantra asan, then so many mantras are chanted, and so many different things are offered. So it becomes complete in itself. He moves to the next asan, and then that's complete in itself. The next asan, and that's complete. So this is the, this was, you can also look at this, that he was describing the first asana, the mantra asana, or the reception of the light. Like that. So then, if there's any questions on this, then tomorrow we'll continue where he goes through the other asanas.
Yes. Do you offer that to Krishna when you offer it to his associates? Is that order you offer to the associates? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying in this order. In other words, his personal paraphernalia, conch, disc, a club, lotus, and all his other paraphernalia, stuba, his vanamala, the shivatsa, like that. Then you go to the close associates like that, then all the devotees. You know? And then it's like the spiritual masters, various demigods, like this. That. He's also pointing out as you take blessings of all these personalities before you enter and start the worship. Right? And then that's why here we see that when Krishna's describing this, many things are happening at once. He's describing in just a few verses basically the whole, you know, Atma Shastras, you know, the whole Vedic systems of worship, the Tantric and the Atmas. All these different things that is being done there. He's doing the essence of that all here. All these various points have to be brought out. So we see here that this process of going up and coming down, you know, the parampara to the associates has been made. Same time as then the pointing out the asanas here. Same time as all these personalities have to have their place. We're taking their blessings. You know, like this, so these things are that. So we'll end here for today. Then we'll continue tomorrow with meeting the Lord. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.